This is episode 69 of the Need to Know podcast from CIO Ops with Taz Gray. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.cioops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates that you can use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this is available at www.cioops.com/publications. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and once again, I'm joined by Taz Gray. Taz, how's it going?
It's going well, Robert. How are you?
Not too bad. I must admit I am a bit annoyed with myself, or pissed off is the technical term for it. I managed to lose my Bluetooth headset, which is a real pain in the butt. It normally lives in the top pocket of my shirt, and I have one shirt that doesn't have a top pocket, and that's the one I went out with, and now I no longer have a Bluetooth earpiece. So, yes, very annoyed about that.
That is very frustrating. Maybe Santa Claus will bring you one.
Well, Santa Claus has already ordered one online for me. I know that, and it's on its way, all right, because I'm desperate for it before Christmas. So, but the one thing I have found, I must admit this year, I mean, I'm not a big fan of going to shopping centres and doing all that, so I'm very much into the e-commerce and having things ordered and delivered, you know, via post. And absolutely, I've got to admit, this year, the stuff that I've ordered has been so efficient. You know, you order it and they confirm the order, then we're dispatching it by our courier, and here's a tracking thing, and you know, it tells you when it's arrived and when you've picked it up. So it is interesting to see how far that's come along and how efficient that's become.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And you know, when we order hardware for our clients, it's so quick these days. I've never had an issue with it, so it's which is a change from the way it was a few years ago, that's for sure. So it's, yeah, we live in a different world when it comes to online shopping.
Well, I think the thing is again, a lot of people are beginning to understand the benefits and the fulfillment side of it, and the good customer service is so important. But I think it's getting to a point now that if you were purely bricks and mortar retailer, then you'd really struggle, because you know, if you know what you want, or you know, you're comfortable surfing on the web, then basically it's almost as good as a shopping experience. And again, you think of all the time, effort, driving, parking, all that sort of stuff you save, there's a lot to it.
Definitely, yeah. And I know a lot of the online retailers actually offer you the option of sending the stuff back if it's not right for you, free of charge, and you get all your money back. So they've sort of broken down that barrier of, oh, is it going to fit, is it not going to fit? And I'm talking about clothing now, probably more than technology. But yeah, it's very easy to shop online.
And I think that was, again, pioneered by Zappos out of the US with their shoes, which is obviously bought out by Amazon. So I've always, you know, again, would always recommend Amazon. Always had a good experience with them generally in their Kindle service and ordering stuff from them. So it's been fantastic. So it sort of, again, indicates the way how efficiently and how, the customer service can be maintained at a high level using technology. So again, you know, very, very interesting to observe.
Definitely. And that's the book written by the CEO of that company, Tony, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name.
Yep.
But that, I can't remember the name, but it, I remember reading that book.
Delivering Happiness.
That's the one. Yep. Yeah. Great book. I highly recommend that. If you haven't read it, check it out.
Yeah, it's a very interesting read. And, you know, again, he's a very unique individual and his business model. And again, it is very interesting to read and see. So certainly a book to put on your list for Christmas. This recording will probably go out after Christmas, but again, I'm sure there'll be sales that you can get that book at.
Or just buy it online, of course. So.
Of course, yeah, the Kindle, yep, my favourite technology tool out of everything.
Okay, there you go, very good.
All right, so we probably need to focus on the subject at hand, and what we thought we'd cover in this episode is we talk about the actual version of Office that comes with Office 365. So basically, to kick everything off, is the fact that a lot of customers I see out there seem to think that Office 365 is just Office on the desktop. So I think if they buy Office 365, all they're getting is basically the latest version of Office that they can install on the machines, which is definitely not the case. I mean, is that sort of confusion also what you're seeing out there?
Yeah, definitely. There is a lot of confusion. I think what's also added to that confusion is that in the consumer range of products, if you do purchase Office 365, it is just a subscription-based version of the product. So I think that certainly adds to it when people look at the business products and they think, well, it must be the same thing. And of course, you and I know it's not.
Well, I think the thing is too is that there is confusion in the market because Microsoft does have a business product, a Business Office 365 suite, which we know and love and has come from BPOS days. But they also have a consumer version of Office 365 Home, which is, I suppose, under the same banner, but is a different offering. So you get, a version of a different version of Office. You get Skype Minutes. You get, OneDrive consumer storage. You get a whole lot of stuff. So unfortunately, they've put it under the same banner, and people tend to get confused, especially the smaller ones who are, maybe looking to buy it in retail.
Yeah, definitely. But I guess it creates opportunity for us, to go in there and explain the differences. And but yeah, you're right. There is certainly some confusion among some people that I speak to.
So anyway, we'll focus on the consumer side, the business side. So again, the idea here is that Office 365 is a suite of products. Now, those products can be bought individually. So for example, you could buy SharePoint online, you could buy just Exchange or Mailboxes online, but they also have the ability to be bought in suites. So you can buy SharePoint, Link, Exchange, and Office bundled into a particular offering to give you better value. So typically what I see is once you get to two or more products, so if you're buying maybe Exchange Online for mail and maybe looking at SharePoint, then the suite becomes a pretty cost-effective way to go. Now, the way that Microsoft has reorganized its plans, it basically now has two tiers, I suppose, of its offering, what they call the business and the enterprise. So the business plans are aimed generally probably at the smaller businesses, and they come in three flavors. So we have what's called business, business essentials, and business premium. So the business version of the plan is just the Office desktop apps plus OneDrive storage in which you can put your files. The business essentials is just the cloud services. So business essentials is just Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online, without any desktop applications. So that's typically aimed at somebody who may be happy or comfortable or already has Office on their desktop. And the third offering called Business Premium is the combination of the two. So Business Premium is the Office on the desktop plus the cloud services. Now, obviously, these are sold at a fairly competitive price point. My personal opinion is they are limiting. I would prefer to go to the enterprise plans, but they certainly provide good value, and now you have the flexibility to upscale to any other plan easily and also incorporate, things like maybe a one-off project online. So that's certainly been a great addition to the Office 365 suite. Do you see a lot of the business style verticals being sold out there, Kaz?
Yeah, look, we've sold quite a few of them since they switched to the renaming, I suppose you'd call it. And I think, look, for some customers it works well. Others, obviously, the enterprise is a better mix. But what I think's interesting now is it can actually combine the two together, which I discovered recently. So that's also a great feature, I thought.
Well, I think the thing is again, the big limitation that has been removed was the fact you can now easily incorporate, enterprise plans and business plans and standalone plans with business plans. We didn't have that flexibility before,
No.
and I think that's a big positive. So my mantra was always to go, the enterprise suite because that provided most flexibility. But, if a customer is very price sensitive, they can certainly start at a business premium. I still would recommend them going to the enterprise suite, but business is a great option. Now, if we look at the enterprise suites, again, typically we have a Office apps Office on the desktop version called Pro Plus. We then have Enterprise E1, which is all the cloud services. So again, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, whatnot. And for the combination of the three, we have Enterprise E3, which is the desktop apps and the cloud services. Now, again, you can see that the business maps to the Pro Plus, the business essentials maps to the E1, the business premium maps to the E3. Now, obviously, there needs to be, or there are differences between the two offerings when it comes to Office and also the web-based cloud services. So the big difference being is that the in the business versions that include Office, you do get Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook, and Publisher. But in those business plans, you don't get link. You don't get access, Microsoft Access for databases, and you also don't get the full version of Link Client. You get what's known as Link Basic, but you don't get the full Link Client. You need the Office 365 Pro Plus, which is the enterprise SKU, to get that.
And Robert, are you able to tell us what's the difference? Because I'm curious myself between the two Link clients.
Okay, so what you get is that Link Basic allows you to attend a meeting, contribute to a meeting, do all that sort of stuff. It doesn't allow you, for example, to do things like record a meeting. It doesn't allow you to do things like whiteboarding. It doesn't allow you to, for example, to create a lobby. So again, some of the more advanced features in Link aren't supported with Link Basic. But for 99 or probably 90% of users, Link Basic is fine. But for the person who's initiating the meeting, who's actually doing the conferencing, wanting to record it, wanting to do things like surveys, whiteboards, and whatnot, they really need the full Link client to achieve that.
Okay, good to know. Good to know, because it's something that I did not know.
So the other thing too is obviously both of those plans come with what will soon be unlimited storage with OneDrive for Business. So any plan that includes Office also includes OneDrive for Business and unlimited cloud storage. It also includes Office Online, so that means that you can edit and view Office documents through a web browser, nice and easy. And again, you get a lot of the core features with Office, the standard version of Excel. Now, where it varies once again is that the business plans, for example, the Office version, you can think of it typically as Office Standard. That means they don't include things like the BI features, business intelligence features of Excel, which include Power Pivot, Power Query, Power View. You don't get compliance support such as information rights management, email retention, data loss prevention, and archiving. You don't get enterprise voice. And most importantly, I suppose, especially for what seems to be a lot of resellers and clients in Australia, is that the business plan, the Office that comes with the business plans, is not supported for use with RDS. So that means that if you're using a terminal server environment and you go with Office 365 business plan, then you're not licensed to use that version of Office on an RDS server. So are you coming across lots of RDS requirements or requests?
Not really. Like amongst our peers, we certainly see that question, or amongst my peers, I should say, I see that question come up quite a bit, and that is certainly something that's changed a lot over the last 12 months, I would say. I'm not, maybe you can tell me, Robert, but as I recall, to even install in an RDS environment, you had to purchase a volume license key to activate a product. Is that still the case?
No, what happened is that used to be the case. So when you purchase the Office from Office 365, users click to run technology, which is a streaming technology, and that wasn't supported basically on an RDS environment. So what you needed to do was purchase a volume license key and media to actually install on an RDS, which obviously added an extra $400 or $500 to the cost of getting it to run an RDS environment. But since September this year, Microsoft has changed that, so you can use something called the Office Deployment Kit to basically pull down a complete copy of all the files and then configure a local XML file, which you can then use to push out that copy onto an RDS server. So the case is you no longer need to purchase any additional items or volume licensing to get Office from Office 365 running on an RDS environment. The only requirement is that you have an enterprise SKU that includes Office 365 Pro Plus.
Okay, I see. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And there's certainly a lot of confusion out there about that, as I say, amongst other IT professionals that I know. Question that comes up quite often, and you probably see that too, I imagine.
Well, I think now that Microsoft, there was a lot of confusion because you used to have, it was only available with M plans under volume licensing, and there were a lot of restrictions around it. And I can understand it from Microsoft's point of view that they don't want their software abused and, not used in a correct manner. And now that they've simplified a lot of that. So at the end of the day, if you have an RDS server, that's basically running on your own hardware. So if the client's running it on either internal or they're running it dedicated in a data center, they can install Office from Office 365, provided they have the enterprise plans and that is fully licensed. Now, where you do see additional issues is if you're trying to run an RDS environment in a basically in a shared environment, so you've got different clients on the same piece of hardware, well, that is not licensed, so under the SPLA type arrangement. Now, the only caveat to that is that if you wish to run an RDS server in a hosted environment, basically using a host's hardware, again, the only way that that's currently supported is under Azure. So you could run up an Azure virtual machine with RDS, and then you could use an Office 365 license to do that, to access that. So that is the only caveat or availability running it under a shared environment. And also the other thing that's just become available now is remote apps through Azure, which means that this allows you to again run like a virtual environment. So this has just gone general availability. So that's something else that you can look at if you want to use an RDS style environment.
Okay, and the remote app is just that's just displaying one app, am I right? So it
Yeah,
just
basically it's the AppV technology as I understand it, and the idea is basically you publish the apps that you want, and then the user double clicks on that and runs it. Now, the good thing about remote app is that it can run on any device, so it's basically RDSing into an Azure box that's dedicated just to that app for that instance, and
okay.
that allows you to run it on an iPad, an Android device, Windows Phone, desktop, whatever. So it's a very good environment. And again, one of the Office 365 benefits is you can use one of your licenses with the remote app environment. There are some, I suppose at the moment, some what I see is potentially some downsides. At the moment, you need basically a minimum of 20 licenses to use the remote app technology, but I see that obviously going down and potentially the price getting cheaper. So that's sort of your third option. So you can run RDS basically on your own premises, on your own hardware. You can run the RDS on a dedicated server in a data center. You can run it on Azure, or you can run it on remote app. And when you do it in that environment, as long as you've got a enterprise version of Office 365 that includes Office, you should be licensed.
There you go. Okay, and remote app, it's to me it sounds a lot like Citrix.
Yeah, I think that look, at the end of the day, what one of the biggest requirements for IT resellers and perhaps some IT pros in larger businesses is control over the app environment, things like group policy and being able to control the app. So I think that an RDS environment gives you that ability, one server, multiple users, better control. And I think Microsoft's now opening up the technologies to allow them to do that as easily, but also give the administrator much more control over how the apps are used, who uses the app, the control, those sort of things. So the model is strangely enough moving back to, I suppose, a dumb terminal with servers in a mainframe sort of environment. So
Yeah,
what goes around comes around.
it is interesting to see that shift back to it was almost like going backwards in time in some ways, but I guess the difference is that the terminal server is living up in Azure or in the data centers, whether it be Azure or somewhere else, but
Well, I think that the difference is now that everybody has not necessarily a dumb terminal, but they have a pretty smart device that they're carrying around in their pocket every day. So I think that what people a lot of people tend to overlook is the enablement that mobile technology is providing us. I mean, we're getting to a point where we can pretty much manage just about everything we need to remotely. If you go out of the office or if you travel somewhere, typically you only need your phone. If you need to do some content creation, you can take a tablet device. And that's why tablets are obviously replacing desktops in a lot of cases. The more stuff you move to the cloud, the less you power you need on the desktop. So that's creating a great environment for enablement and allowing people to get out and get on with their jobs rather than being locked into the office.
yeah, definitely, definitely. All right. Well, I think we should come back to office, Robert. What are you?
Yeah, so we'll go back to Office. So again, some of the important things to remember is that when you do get Office from Office 365, you get the ability to install on five PC or Mac devices. So you're able to take five copies, which you can, which will be available via the portal. So you can just log into your Office 365 portal, You go into the area where the software is, you can just click to download that onto your desktop. And you've got, like I said, a Mac version as well as a PC version. Unfortunately, the Mac version is a little bit dated now. I think it's Mac 2011, and they are looking to schedule to update that. But certainly with the PC version, you do get Office 2013. So the good thing there is you can put it on 5 devices, and then what you can do is you can control that from your Office 365 portal. So you can decommission it from a machine in your portal, and then you can go and install it on another machine. So again, you can have it installed on lots of machines, but basically you activate it on 5 that you are currently using. So that's a very handy ability, and certainly provides a lot of flexibility.
And also, I think one thing worth noting there is that the user themselves can actually manage that. They don't doesn't require an IT administrator.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that part of it is that, I mean, we've all come across a situation where a user needs, PowerPoint to do this one additional animation, and they haven't got it, and they need the right version because they've got, the PPTX version or something. So this allows them to stream it onto a PC wherever they are, and then when they're finished with it, they can uninstall it or they could just deactivate it. Now, what happens is the Office from Office 365 basically does a check-in via the internet to ensure the license is valid. It does this on a random deal every 30 days. If it fails initially, it will then wait another random 30 days and try again. If it then fails twice, so if it fails twice in 60 days, then it will go into deprecated mode, which by or reduced functionality mode, as Microsoft calls it, which means it can open, view, but obviously can't edit, and I don't believe can print either. So again, you get some functionality, but not very much. So, that's the idea. It checks in once every 60 days, giving you that flexibility.
Very good. Okay, I've never actually seen that happen because I'm always licensed, luckily, but that's good to know.
Well, I think the thing it's a relatively simple, as long as you're connected to the internet, you get edge cases where people aren't connected to the internet, and there are ways to get around that, but it certainly gives you that flexibility. Now, the other thing with Click to Run, obviously, is because it's a streaming technology, it's typically updating in the background. So you're making sure that you've got all the latest components. Now, because you're buying it on a subscription, it also means when new versions become available, you'll be able to automatically upgrade to those. So the rumor is that sometime in 2015, we believe, Office, the next version of Office will become available, and people who are on an Office 365 will have that available to them immediately if they choose. Now, Microsoft's policy is that once a new version comes out, you have 12 months to upgrade to the new version. So if it comes out on the 1st of January, you would have until the 1st of January 2016 to upgrade to Office, 2015 if it came out. So that again, I think, is a great option. It does cause some consternation out there with people who are using old add-ins and old plugins, but generally, I think it's a very positive thing to get everybody up to the same level and keep them consistent. I mean, is that a good thing that you've been seeing with your clients?
Definitely, I think putting everyone on the same version is always a good idea, and I like the idea that the next version just comes through straight away, and there's no, I guess from an IT administrator's point of view, it simplifies things greatly. So I think it's definitely the way forward, and I have noticed I think so, Robert, with the next version of Office, will that be just will it be Office 2015, as you said, or will it be something else? Is it just going to be the next Office and
Well, again,
that's it?
we're sort of all speculating here because nobody really knows. I think that we look at the Windows model. So they're talking about a Windows 10, obviously coming out, in 2015 as well. And the rumors there seem to indicate that it will no longer be Windows 11, 12, 13. It'll just be Windows, and it'll be a subscription style model. And Microsoft's going to make an announcement, I believe, in January, as to how it's going to provide this to people. My gut feeling is that it's going to go to some sort of subscription model as well, because that's the way they're going with everything. Makes the most sense. Make sure that everybody's current with the server and allows them to push it out. So yeah, you would think that we're probably getting to the point where there won't be Office version numbers anymore. It'll just be Office, and effectively it'll be Office always up to date.
Yeah, and because I do know SharePoint, the next version, I think it's just SharePoint Next. Am I right? Is that what
Well,
they're
again,
calling?
they never settled on a name to the last point. They have committed to another on-premise version of SharePoint, Again, you would think it typically will be 2015 probably, but again, I think it's getting to a point where it's just going to be, Office, SharePoint, Office 365. They're not going to put version numbers necessarily on it because, again, it dates the software very quickly. If you look at, the Mac version, for example, that's Office 2011. That's now getting on to 4 years old. And even though it does the job and all that sort of stuff, there's still this perception that, it's old, but it's the most current version.
Yeah, sure. I think yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, but yeah, I certainly the subscription model is changing the way we think about software. And I mean, this is nothing new to you or I would imagine, but from a user perspective, I guess wrapping your head around it might be.
Well, I think the thing is too is, do you have users who look at it and then multiply out the cost per month by, 3 years and say, no, this is too expensive? I mean, do you see that, or do you see users who go, okay, well, I can afford, a few dollars a month, and from there? I mean, what's the sort of feeling there?
Yeah, look, so I think initially when Office 365, I guess, hit the market, people were looking at it from that perspective, but obviously, when we do encounter that, we say to people, "Well, you got to. You can, it's not really an apples and apples comparison if you're doing it that way, because there's so much more in Office 365, obviously, than just the desktop apps. That's really just, the tip of the iceberg, if you like." So I think now people's thinking has changed, and I'm seeing less of that mentality.
Yeah, I think the thing is people have become comfortable with the subscription. They're beginning to appreciate that they're getting the latest version. They're getting, 5 installs, on their desktop. They're also getting, again, 5 installs on their tablet devices, as well as 5 installs on their smartphone devices, and they're getting the ability to access it on their iPad as well. So there are a lot of benefits, and again, the benefit obviously is something that Microsoft is keen on because they're finding it the best way to deliver software. So I think going forward, that's always going to be Microsoft's preferred option. Anything else is going to have a bit of, I suppose, be a bit more difficult to implement. So it makes a lot of sense that the way it's going. I think there's a lot of benefits being rolled into that, and I think people have got to get away from this concept of just multiplying technology out by 3 years. I mean, technology changes so rapidly every less than 3 months. That again, you're right, it doesn't compare apples with apples.
Yeah, and look, we live in a subscription world now when it comes to IT, I think. You don't really buy much up front anymore, except for maybe your hardware. Everything else is a subscription, don't you think?
Yeah, I think, look, and I think, again, if you look at car leasing, you think at other business functions, the car lease, you look at your mobile phone, you look at you're renting your business premises. So much is just month by month to give you that flexibility, and businesses are comfortable with this. So I think that, again, looking at software as a something that you lease, or basically something that you pay on a monthly basis. And I think that what a lot of people make the mistake is they think, well, if I buy it outright for $300 or $400, then I own the software, in inverted commas. Well, the reality is that you're just licensing the software. You never actually own it. Microsoft gives you a license. You pay for a license to use that. And if you read the install, actually, when you install Office, you'll say, look, we are providing you with this software as a license. You don't actually own the software. So when you look at it, there's not a lot of difference, except for the fact that they're paying with their capital, obviously upfront at the time of purchase, rather than spreading their payments out, over an ongoing period. And as long as they're getting the latest and greatest software, then there's a real benefit there. Just apart from, if you buy it outright, you've then got to install it, you've then got to patch it, you've got to update it, and then when things change, you potentially have to go out and buy a new version.
Yeah, so potentially costing more money in the long run.
And I think, again, that's the downside, especially with technology. They look at only the immediate fixed cost, what they can see, what they can touch, but they don't look at all the incidental costs that happen, the patching, the management, the updating, have people on different versions. Every time, typically, when a business got Office, they got it with a new machine, which meant that, you would have 2007 on this machine, then 2010 over here, and a different version over here. Now, with the subscription model, you can certainly put the same version across all your devices.
Yeah, no, it simplifies things greatly, and yeah, it's the way forward, and people are certainly seeing that now, in my experience. So it's that's a conversation that rarely comes up.
And I think the thing is to focus is, for me, as I've pointed out, is that you get the most benefit, you get the most features using the Pro Plus version, which is an enterprise from the enterprise SKUs. So the business one doesn't give you some of the enterprise features. Some of the enterprise features are definitely worth the investment. So, for example, you get the RDS rights, which we've talked about. You get the compliance features. So you get things like the archiving, the e-discovery, and the mailbox hold built into the enterprise plans, which obviously link into the clients. And you get things like the message encryption, the rights management service, and the data loss prevention. So the data loss prevention allows you, for example, to basically say, if someone sends a credit card number out, or you can actually upload a document template and say, if the document being sent out looks like this document, then basically put a stop on it or take this action. So,
Yeah, I actually saw a really good presentation on that recently, and it does look very powerful. And one of the great things about the DLP in Office 365 is that a lot of the common stuff is already actually in there and templated. So it's really just a matter of going in and ticking boxes to say, I don't want credit card information sent out, and it's just on. Has that been your experience with it?
yeah, look, I think it is, and I think the main thing is, one of the things when I talk to resellers about stuff is, look, email is email. You don't there's not a lot of money. There's less and less money to be made in migrating emails. That will eventually come to an end. Managing emails, there's less needs to be done now because a lot of it's been done by Microsoft. Where the value add is in something like email is in these enterprise features. Now, typically in a small environment, most people have never had access to these sort of features. So again, I think this is where the value add can be done for resellers to go in and understand and learn, the archiving, the e-discovery, the DLP, the rights management, and then go to their clients and say, you know what, we can enable this for you, or we can make this feature, and this is how we do it. And there's a whole training regime around it. So e-discovery, for example, I think is a very good opportunity because, unfortunately, we see more and more litigation in today's society, and part of that litigation requires one being served with a document from lawyers who say, look, we need to see every document, email, electronic correspondence that mentions Joe Smith, Bahamas, and Bitcoin, for example. How would you provide that information today on premise? It'd be very difficult. But with e-discovery built into Office 365, you can basically run a search, output that information to a PST file or to a portal that the lawyers can access and go from there. So again, I think that there's huge opportunity looking at these advanced features because we haven't seen them in the small end of market, and there aren't a lot of people with expertise in them.
No, definitely not. And I think, yeah, the people that do have the expertise are taking that, or they're working in businesses that are catering to the government and the enterprise space. So I think you're right, there is an opportunity to take that in possibly in a simplified form to the smaller end of the market and just let them know about it. I think that would be a good
Well,
starting
and
point.
I think part of it too is to look at enable it even in the most basic form, So again, implement the message encryption if you want, implementing the e-discovery or the archiving. I mean, archiving is off by default in the enterprise plan, so again, on all plans actually. So again, you can run a PowerShell script that enables that and then train users how to use it. So it reduces the amount of stuff that's in their inbox on premise. They can still access it obviously through the cloud, but do you really need 50 gig of emails on your desktop or every desktop you go to? Probably not. So if you can
Definitely not.
minimize that, makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. But I think, well, it's certainly something I'm going to look at in the future, but yeah, ripe opportunity.
So I think that's, again, the big benefit of those enterprise plans, the enterprise version of Office. It's interesting to see that. Obviously, you're working with things like Access as well, and for me, Excel is my preferred tool of option, and Power BI and that sort of stuff. But the power of these desktop tools and what they can do, and then you combine them with the cloud and that sort of thing is just phenomenal. But unfortunately, I don't see a lot of people taking advantage of it, and I suppose that's negative, but that spells opportunity for a reseller who's able to convey that message and help clients understand the benefits.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you're right about the power of Excel compared to what it was even 5 years ago. I think, yeah, with the little Power Pivot, Power View, and those things has really stepped it up a level.
Well, I think part of it too is, look, there's so much. I think, we're talking about a potentially a 2015, which indication, especially in Australia, are it's going to be a bit of a quite challenging environment. But on the other side, I think there are never been more opportunities in the IT sphere. It's a matter of reorientating your vision a bit. But again, I see Power BI as being a great opportunity because so many CEOs, managers understand Excel. They need to analyze their figures. They're not comfortable with doing with Power Pivot and then pushing it into a web-based forum. And that's where something like Power BI can help. But you're going to have to take the time to invest in the product and understand BI and spin up with it. But again, just think how many opportunities there are to do Power BI even in one vertical. So you've got that in Excel, you've got that in Access, you've got that in all sorts. Again, you would help people archive their emails correctly, managing the compliance. I just think there's just so many opportunities, but I think the secret to it is you do have to specialize, and as we've talked about before, look to team up with people who are also specialists in other areas that are complementary to yours. So you can't do it all anymore. You have to specialize and then buddy up with people who, specialize in other areas.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, because traditionally as an IT person, your focus is obviously on building the hardware and the server environment and those types of things, which, cloud era is just really, it's almost a set of skills that is no longer needed, wouldn't you say, Robert? I guess.
Well, I think, look, at the end of the day, especially when you're looking at something like Azure, which is Microsoft's data center style technology, is that the fundamentals apply. The TCP/IP, the IP addressing, the networking, the net masks, virtual machines. You have to have that base understanding, but I don't think you need to necessarily lock yourself into specifics. The big skill now is obviously PowerShell, but yeah, at the end of the day, it's moving up the stack. There's less and less need to do the day-to-day sort of stuff, the rudimentary, putting machines together, plugging them in. You're looking at adding the services and enabling things for users. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of resellers lose that, the fact that the job that you provide is all about enabling technology for users. What do they want to use? How do they want to use it? They don't want to use a server. They don't want to use a desktop. They need it to achieve this report, or they need to produce this document. That's what you need to focus on. What's the output for the end user rather than the actual technology underlying it?
Yeah. So basically aligning the technology with the business outcomes, allowing them to achieve what they need to.
And part of that is obviously is you've got to go in there and understand what the business needs are. It's not so simple as saying, well, you need a new computer or you need a server upgrade. You need to understand what they're trying to achieve, because a lot of it can be done either from the cloud or with, tablets and apps and PCs and, that are not PCs anymore. So I think that's where the change is we're getting away from a situation where it was easy just to box ship. A lot of it needs to be more business focused as to, how can you solve this problem for a business? And part of that means, if you're an IT provider or a reseller, you need to get into those sort of businesses, that sort of area yourself. You need to start using these technologies so that you have some understanding.
Yeah, no, it's you're certainly right. I think the more you understand about, I guess, your client and their business, then the better position you are, assuming you've taken the time to learn the technology, to then go in and recommend that for them in a way that's going to make them more efficient, more profitable, or whatever the case may be.
Well, I think one of the struggles that a lot of resellers have and maybe end users, well, where do you get the information from? Now, Microsoft publishes a huge amount of information. A lot of other providers do the same thing. So, again, it's not just going to pop out of your screen. It's not going to be the top research, the top result in your search engine. You're going to have to go out and find the good sources and potentially pay some money for them. Or again, I think the secret to it is, as I've talked about with social, is that you need to find the influencer. You need to find out the people who are the experts in that field, and basically either go to them or follow them and see what they're talking about, what resources they recommend, and that sort of thing. I think that's the key to it. I just don't think you can take all the information from emails, Twitter, social media, LinkedIn, all that sort of stuff, and then try and work it out yourself. I think you're going to have to throw a lot of it away. And the secret to it is, I think, is to find the influencer and either ask them or see what they are recommending that you should be doing to get up to speed.
Yeah, definitely. And in addition to that, I would say that going to the meetups is another great way of getting insights. I've certainly learned a lot from going to that. people putting on demonstrations, which actually gives you hands-on, I guess, with the product so that you can see what they're doing and then think about how you might take that away and apply that to your clients.
I think also too the other side of that is actually making a connection with those individuals so that when you do have an issue, you can obviously contact them and ask their experience or they can give you some guidance. I think the lone gunslinger is just not possible anymore. The technology is moving too fast. There are too many options. It's there's too much depth of knowledge in each product to do that. So I think the important thing, especially for the smaller provider, is to surround yourself with a group of experts that you can lean on, and then part of that is obviously what do they get out of it? How can you help them achieve their ends and their customers? And again, that's a two-way street.
Yeah, and look, this is a very new way of thinking. I believe anyway. So it's I don't think anyone really has it all worked out yet. Would you think that's fair to say, Robert?
Well, I think the thing is again, it is a brave new world. I think that part of it is not technology; it's a new way of doing business. A lot of people aren't comfortable with letting other parties into their business. So before you had your business, and your business could, if you wanted to do Power BI, you would employ a Power BI expert inside your business as an employee, and they would do what you asked. I just don't think that's possible anymore. I think the fact is now you have to open your business up and bring in partners who are highly skilled and share with them, part of your customers, part of your revenue, part of the opportunity in the aim that they will do the same for you. So we're creating this mesh of experts that do work together and specialize. But you're right, it's a different way of doing business. But part of that is overcoming that fear that if I bring somebody in, they're going to steal my clients. I think, again, you've still got to do your due diligence. You've got to find good partners and all that sort of stuff. But I would say the vast majority out there are very keen to do business and are very professional.
Yeah, definitely. Do your homework, of course. But we look. I've done this in the past. Brought other people in, and on the flip side, I've been brought into organisations to consult. And as long as everyone's on the same page, it works well.
Well, I think part of it is again, you've got to go into it with that understanding, with your processes, the ability to ensure that you have those checks and balances. And part of it really comes down to communication. As soon as there's a communications breakdown, or sooner you're not getting the information you used to, or as soon as you detect a change, you need to step in and obviously, say, okay, what's going on here? Are we having issues? Let's sit down and chat rather than let it fester. So I think that is the biggest challenge, and that's what I'm, when things go wrong, that's typically not what's happened. And the reason it hasn't happened is because I've got busy, because other things, you've neglected that relationship. So it's the same with any relationship. It needs time, it needs constant work and nurturing to make sure that it does grow. You can't just do it and leave it. And I think again, if you're going to bring people into your business, if you're going to, build this network, you really need to be working on the connections and the relationships, which unfortunately I don't see many resellers. They set up a relationship and then, they're too busy to continue that or to have coffee or make an hour here or make an hour there just to shoot the breeze. I mean, it is very difficult, and sometimes to arrange, but again, the payoffs are ginormous, and I think that's what ensures a good relationship and removes generally a lot of issues down the track.
Yeah, it's interesting because IT, and you might have said this, Robert, but it was once about the technical, and it's we're no longer there anymore. I think, as you said, you do need to have the knowledge of the underlying principles and the technology, but in a business context, it's now about the relationship with the client and the relationship with the business and how deep that goes, which obviously, the deeper the better, enabling you to do more for them. And if you can't do that, I think you're going to struggle in the future because that's what people are going to be looking for.
Well, I think the thing is the information that you are a specialist at is available on the internet. I mean, anybody could become an expert in what you're doing. They've just got to invest the time that you have. So really the technical differentiation is being, minimized, let's say. So again, the thing that's unique is the relationships that you bring to that and how you work with others. And that's the important thing that a lot of people overlook. And, when an IT reseller, typically what I've seen and it has happened to me is that, you're doing a great job for some customer, working really well. There's a regime change at the customer, a new managing director or a new accountant or finance controller. and then you're out on your ear because they can bring in their friends or someone else who's doing the same technical thing because you haven't built up that relationship. So I think that at the end of the day, strong relationships with customers and vendors and also your peers are basically what's going to get you business and is also going to keep you business.
Definitely, definitely.
All right, well, we probably need to look at wrapping this up. We did start talking about office, but as always, we've tended to drift a bit into the business, which I think is good. Hopefully, nobody's complaining about that. But I think that, look, in summary, that the important thing to take away is that Office is available through Office 365. You can download, basically, most plans include Office. Make sure that you understand the differentiation between the business versions and the enterprise versions. My recommendation is always the enterprise versions because you get the full Pro Plus version, which is the full version of Office without any limitations. Now we have the ability to be flexible between business and enterprise versions, which is fantastic. So the managing director can have the E3 license, whereas maybe someone working out in the factory needs only the business essentials, which is just the cloud version. So again, make sure that you understand which versions you're getting and the differentiation between them. But importantly, remember that you get 5 installs of Office for all plans of include Office on PCs, Macs. You'll get 5 installs on your tablets and also 5 installs on your smartphone. So I think that's a great offering, and I'm seeing more and more clients move towards it. So, I mean, is there anything else that we need to maybe summarise for people in that, Taz?
Robert, I think you covered it all pretty well there. I'm not sure there's anything I could add to that. Good job.
So I think that, again, I would suggest that people need to, resellers or looking to grow their business or maybe expand to other areas, look into these things like, the Power BI features, the Power View, the Power Query. I think, Taz, you'd be telling people, maybe not, but you'd be recommending they have a look at advanced things like Access to provide the stuff that maybe SharePoint can't do directly, that Access as a front end can provide them. Is that a fair thing?
Yeah, definitely. And look, I mean, it's all, you got to treat everything on a case-by-case basis, but I think, for some businesses, Access can provide a lot of value. They just need to be shown how to do it.
I think, look, the features are there, and they can obviously employ a specialist like yourself to come in and do it, but there's certainly a lot that can be done with these desktop applications, isn't there, really?
Yeah, look, Microsoft Go seems to put a lot of effort into simplifying this as much as possible, so you can do a lot without a lot of technical know-how, I suppose, would be how I'd describe it. And yeah, there's a lot of power in there out of the box without really needing to know how to code at all. So definitely get in there and just play with it. And huge amounts of information out there on the internet, videos and whatnot.
I think part of it too is the way to shortcut some of this is, again, if they're into Access, they probably need to get in contact with you. I'd certainly welcome anybody contacting me about Power BI and connections with SharePoint and things like that. So, that's your other option. Find the peers who are doing it, find the peers who are interested, or find others who, like I said, are looking to get that skill and maybe work together and build a business around that. I think, that's the way you need to look. The single gun approach basically is going to be very tough to maintain. It's not impossible, but it's very tough to run a business, especially if you're relatively small these days. So again, reach out to your peers, look to those who are already doing it or thinking about doing it, and buddy up with them and build your business that way.
Definitely, definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we've covered just about everything for this episode. Again, it's been good to chat. What we might do again is just get Taz to outline his details. So if anybody's got any questions or wants some more information about what you can help them with, Taz, how would they achieve that?
Sure. Yeah, look, people can reach me on email. It's tas@axiomit.com.au. And I'm also on Twitter as Tas Gray. That's TASGRAY. Google+ is Tas Gray IT. And then LinkedIn, of course, just look me up, Tas Gray. So plenty of options there.
Good. And like I said, I'll put all the details in the show notes and Taz's contact details. You can reach me via my website, ciaops.com. That's got all the contacts for email and LinkedIn and the blog. The blog's the best option to keep up to date with what's going on, all the show notes for this sort of thing. And again, I encourage people to contact me via any medium with any questions, queries, or maybe some suggestions for the show going forward. So I think with that, Taz, we're pretty much done.
Sounds like it.
All right, well, again, I'll thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast, and we hope to have you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.